Information about the world of running, inspiration to fuel passion and excellence, and ideas for making connections and finding community. You're listening to A to Z Running. Hi, friends. Welcome to the A to Z Running Podcast, where we help runners thrive. I'm Andy.
And I am Zach.
Today on the A to Z Running Podcast, we have Emma Bates on air to talk about in-race decisions. We also have a stacked world of running.
And you want to know all of this information every time we have it to share with you, which means you need to go to atozrunning.com, click the word follow, and subscribe on YouTube and ring the bell. It's just like the church bells in the middle of the old-fashioned city. When you ring it, everyone will know. No, wait. That's not what it does. It notifies you when we publish, and that's good. So thank you to all of you who chimed in to help Andy with her very serious problem.
With
wait,
screens?
No, this is a different thing.
With oh, I have so screen, many problems.
With the screen thing, that's right. We're talking about screens. Because she mentioned recently screens as a distraction for her.
Yes.
And you shared your wisdom.
Yes. So thank you all so much. In fact, I wanted to share so many of your comments with me because you gave me some great advice. So I actually wrote a blog post. So you can check that out. If you go to atozrunning.com, you'll be able to find it. Special thanks to Nicole, Matt, Amanda, Whitney, Ann, Rash, Orsi, Kyla, and Nick.
Lots of special things.
And probably even more that I'm not telling right now. So we'll have to make sure that I, you know, credit everybody with their thoughts.
So you can check that out and you can read it on the site, which is a great place to go for anything interesting about running. But before we get on to the content, we want to share a product this week specifically because it comes with a discount for you. Mm-hmm. So if you like what you see, you should get some. And we're talking about ProTech, and you've heard us talking about ProTech. Specifically, we've got the Orb Extreme and the Orb Activate here for you to see. Andy, people can't see when you're throwing things up in the air. So the reason why you like these is because they're small and easy to take with you anywhere you're going when you need the myofascial release, which you need frequently.
Yeah.
And which means you need these right now.
So the reason why I wanted to bring it up too is that I've been bringing this to the gym with me because they are not allowing people to use their rollers right now. Like, they've removed all of them. So bringing something compact like this little orb ball is super convenient.
Or if you know the right person to ask in a very secret way, you can still get the foam rollers.
Seriously?
Yes, but Andy doesn't know that person.
I guess I don't have that influence.
So these things are good because we talk so often about taking care of your body, and taking care of your body involves a number of different kinds of things like massage and myofascial release, and it's not always easy to do that. So an apparatus like those will help immensely. So you can use the code A to Z 10 to get your 10% off and then give us a little commission because you also like to help us and support the show.
You don't have to pay any extra for it.
No,
you actually get a discount.
You don't. You get a discount.
But we should let you know that we are now an affiliate. This is a very recent thing for us. So exciting that ProTech was willing to, you know, send us some products and then also allow us to be an affiliate. Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that means, but we do make money when you use code A to Z 10 for 10% off on any of ProTech's products.
Awesome. Well, let's get to the world of running.
Well, as Andy mentioned, the world of running is very exciting to share with you, at least the few things that we have on the docket to share with you, because we can never talk about everything. There is too much. And it's all good. Mm. However, we want to begin back on the 20th. This was Saturday, February 20th, in San Juan Capistro, California, in a very small single event track meet, which these kinds of things are becoming more common. They used to never be heard of, but one event, one race, well, two races, one event, 10,000 meters, and it was amazing.
Smoking.
There may have only been a handful of finishers in each race, men's and women's, but it was well worth it. So first, in general, as mentioned, it was just a very small thing. The goal was an Olympic standard race. They were trying to run the Olympic standards for the men's races and the women's races and see how many people could join them under that time. So that's what the pacers did. That's what everybody was going for. And those times, by the way, for the women, you ready for this, Andy? The women's Olympic A standard is 31:25. For 10,000 meters.
Mm-hmm. That's really fast.
That is not slow at all. And the men's time is 27:28 for 10,000 meters. I think they did that on purpose because the consecutive number. Yeah. Okay. So very fast times. And that's what they were trying to do in these races. So, by the way, we have included a link so you can watch the live feed recap. And it's well worth watching. Yeah. It's just really an exciting thing to hear the narrative behind a race like this. Okay, so Bowerman Track Club was there, which automatically means people were running fast because apparently that's the only thing they know how to do now. And they just really, they really showed up. So let's talk about the women for a moment. Elise Cranny of Bowerman Track Club took the race in a time of 30 minutes, 47 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Not too shabby, especially when you think about her teammate, Carisha Schweitzer, half a second behind her, also in 30 minutes, 47 seconds.
They were duking it out. It was legit.
Something.
Kick to the finish.
Something. So Carisha was really trying to prove her, because she's got some long distance or longer distance for Bowerman Track Club, at least prowess on that team. And she was really trying to prove her mettle, just throwing down the surges. And she couldn't shake Cranny. And then, you know, in the final stretch, Cranny went around her and took the win. It's almost kind of like a cruel trick of fate or something. Anyway, so you don't need to hear me talk about it. Go watch the commentary and see the race for yourself. But you do want to hear us tell you why that's so significant, which is because now Elise Cranny and Carisha make third and fourth on the all-time U.S. women's 10,000 meter list.
Woo!
Third and fourth all time. Yeah. And they're teammates, and they did it in the same race.
Making history.
Yeah, no small thing. An early season, too. Thing. That's right. The only two Americans who have run faster than them are Molly Huddle and Shailene Flanagan.
Mm.
And that's saying something when those are the two names that you're listing.
Yep.
So right behind them, by the way, and this is also significant for so many reasons, was Elise McColgan. And she's of Great Britain. She is not part of Bowerman Track Club. I should mention that. She runs for ASICS. But she showed up at the meet, and she performed. So for the British, running 30:58, also under 31 minutes, for the fifth fastest time in British history. Get this, only 2 seconds behind her mother, Liz.
I love that.
Who is also her
legacy.
Legacy. Oh, it's so cool.
Coaching her to be faster than herself.
Yeah. Okay. That's so nice. so many things that you could say. You know, there's stories here. There are stories upon stories here, but we don't have the time to give you all the stories. We just want to at least give you enough so you can go find out more yourself. Emily Infeld, Marielle Hall, also of Bowerman Track Club, also ran under the Olympic standard. So that was Infeld in 31:08. And Hall, actually, she ran 31:21, but she's run 31:05 already in the qualifying window. So she has a faster qualifying time.
Nice.
And then Kim Conley.
Nice.
And we'll talk more about her sometime soon. Kim Conley ran a strong, she just missed her PR by 5 seconds. She ran 31:40. And we had the very good fortune of interviewing her shortly after this race, in fact. And you're going to be hearing that interview coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot to say there, but that was about it. So as I mentioned, these were small races. There were a few others, pacers. Gwen Jorgensen was in the race, didn't put together a great race for herself, but very small, very fast run. So now for the men, Mark Scott of the Bowerman Track Club, running for Great Britain, took the race in a time of 27 minutes, 10 seconds, good for second ever by a British runner in the 10,000 meters. That means the only British runner to run faster than Mark Scott is the great Mo Farah. And that's saying something.
It is.
Wow.
He himself. That's amazing.
So congrats to Mark Scott. He's been on fire. This whole COVID season has just been a Mark Scott show, it seems. But he's been running fast times all over the place across many distances. But he was not alone running those fast times, as you might guess. Also then, second and third place being Bowerman Track Club gentlemen, was in second, Grant Fisher in his first ever, and I didn't even know this until after I read it, because I just thought there's no way this is his first ever 10,000 meters on the track. Well, it was. And as a debut, he ran 27 minutes and 11 seconds.
What a debut.
And the reason why everyone's jaws are on the floor right now is because that debuted him as the fifth fastest American ever at the distance.
That is
in his first try.
Quite amazing.
Wow. Okay. So Grant Fisher, who, by the way, is also a Michigan native, ran at Grand Blanc High School. And so we've been able to kind of like feel some kind of connection to him.
We've been following
him
for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Grand Blanc High School and then Stanford University and now Bowerman Track Club. Yeah. He has walked the globe in his running career. So, or run the globe, I should say. That was fast. And that was amazing. But just behind him, one more second back, was Woody Kincaid of the Bowerman Track Club, also an American, running 27:12, which was now then good for the sixth fastest time in a 10K by an American ever. So Bowerman Track Club basically decided to rewrite the 10K record books with
apparently
this meet. Yes, wow. Literally did that. And so that's just incredible. Very fast. But there were other gentlemen in the race, and there's still more to tell. Ben True, who, by the way, is no longer sponsored. So we're talking now about an unsponsored athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran 27:14, which was nearly a 30-second PR at 35 years of age.
Ben True.
And the eighth fastest time ever by an American in a 10K. I really wonder if Saucony right now is just feeling like, why are we not still sponsoring Ben True?
Oh, man, yeah.
Because he just did that.
I know. And he's in his 30s, so I'm loving it. We're in our 30s, too. I like to hear
are you saying
when
we're old.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, that's
nice
that
to hear
gives,
he's going fast.
Anyone who's 35 or under feels hope when he runs a 30-second PR. Good for
everyone
you know,
else has hope
time.
Too, Zach.
Well, that's I mean,
gracious.
I hope. See what I did there. So Kieran Tuntivate, who then finished fifth in the race to round out the whole race, had five finishers, was only a few seconds back. So these guys were all like super close together. As a matter of fact, with a lap to go, they were basically all still neck and neck and neck and neck and neck and neck. So the fifth and the final finisher of the race ran 27:17, also well under the Olympic standard. And it should be noted that Kieran is with Bowerman Track Club, but he represents Thailand, and he graduated from Harvard. I wanted to say that recently. He just graduated recently, so he's a young guy. Represents Thailand, and so now at 27:17, set a new Thailand national record in the 10,000 meters and the fourth fastest Asian time, period, ever.
Wow.
That's incredible.
That's
faster than
race.
All of the Japanese, which is really saying something because they're incredible distance runners over the years. Like, that's something. So,
yeah.
Yes. Okay. Bowerman Track Club rewriting record books the world over in a single 10K race.
Crazy.
And one more comment. It should be noted that to date, 12 American women now have run under the Olympic standard for the Tokyo Olympics in the 10K. 12.
This Olympic trials is going to be like awesome.
Yeah. And
our guest today is also in a contender for that.
And there's only ever like 28 people who run in the Olympics in the 10K. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly the size of the race. I think it varies slightly, but it's not very many. And 12 Americans have run the qualifying time, and only three of them will go.
Yeah.
Now the question is, which three?
Which three?
Wow.
We'll
All right.
Saying trials for sure.
Exciting.
So coming up, Atlanta Half Marathon. The reason why it's notable is that there's a lot of big names that will be there. Molly Seidel, Natasha Rogers, Matt Lano. Previous guest, Joanna Stevens, will be there as well.
Oh.
Yeah, and someone you mentioned earlier, is it Eilish McCoggan?
Yes, of Great Britain.
So she'll be there again. So she's going to be doing kind of back-to-back races here, which is exciting.
And that should be her debut half marathon. Isn't that what
we
were reading? So
her debut.
Having, you know, just run an amazingly fast 10K, you know that she can run a good half because it's basically the same kind of event. So that's going to be cool.
Double it, but you know.
Doesn't
so
mean much.
An event that's coming up is kind of near and dear to our hearts.
Ah, yes.
Because not only are we running in the event, the Trials and Miles Texas Qualifier, but we also have several athletes who've been on the show. Previous guests on the show will be there.
So February 26th and 27th, that's a Friday and a Saturday, and the Saturday night premiere events will be live streamed by Sidious Mag, so you can go to their YouTube channel. We've included a link because you should definitely watch it. Now, you won't see us, thankfully, because who wants to?
It actually takes a little pressure off to know that they're not live streaming my race. But
I'm sad because I want to be on TV.
Yeah.
But you can watch the premier event and see all of these outstanding athletes mm-hmm. competing on that live stream Saturday night. And we've got the time and everything. It starts 6:45 p.m. Central Standard Time. So make sure you adjust to time zones wherever you are. And as you're doing that, you can see 800s, 1500s, 5Ks, 10Ks, and the best of the best, at least, who are available and near the U.S. at the moment.
Yeah, and briefly, in the 800, you can look for Charlene Lipsey, Kendra Chambers, and Kate Grace was on the list, but she has recently hurt her foot. In the 10K, Anne-Marie Kirkpatrick, who was on the show, and Leah Fallon and Emily Oren running the 5K.
And that is going to be a great meet to watch, so tune in, and that's all we have for you at the moment, because we got to get on to our main topic.
For our main topic, we're talking about how should runners approach in-race decisions. And we brought on a racing expert, Emma Bates, to talk us through how we're supposed to do, like, pack running, make moves, drop out, hang tough. Like, there's so many in-race decisions that we need to make. And Emma brings some deep and valuable insight from her dynamic race experiences. And she generously shares her race reflections, which will leave us all with some valuable insight about racing. So let's get to our guest introduction. So like I mentioned, our guest is top U.S. distance runner Emma Bates. Now, her alma mater is Boise State University, where she was a 12-time All-American and the 10K NCAA champion in 2014. Post-collegiately, Emma's done a lot of stuff. I mean, she's had many top 10 finishes, including her debut marathon, which was the U.S. Championship Marathon, and she won that race.
Not too bad.
She also won the U.S. 25K Championships. That's the Riverbank Run, for those of you from Grand Rapids. You
also
know that one, near
bad.
And dear to our hearts. Her marathon personal best is 2:25:27, making her the 12th fastest marathoner in U.S. history. And she recently was fourth at the Marathon Project, and we're going to dive into that race specifically during this interview, where she ran 2:25:40 with less than ideal situation. And she'll tell us more about that in the episode. So today, Emma's bringing us some really rich insight about in-race decisions. Let's talk to Emma. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the A to Z Running Podcast.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Very happy to be here.
Well, this is super exciting because we've been tracking your career for quite some time, and we are so impressed by you, what you've done, how you've trained, and of course, how you've been sharing this journey with the running community. It's so valuable. So we're just so thrilled to have you here on the show today. Let's start with the Marathon Project. Now, you've been going through your experience in a really beautiful way on Instagram, so I'll make sure that I link to that for our audience to read what you've written. But we'd love to start there because it's most recent, most fresh, talking about in-race decisions. Do you want to talk us through your race and some of the decisions you've made along the way?
Yeah, so as some people know throughout my Instagram posts, I'm doing like an installment it's 26.2 miles. It's a very long race. So a lot of thoughts and a lot of things happen. So I just kind of wanted to address that and give people a little more insight. So to start off, I had a really rough time the weeks leading up to the race. So I had some personal things that occurred in my life that caused a lot of stress. And so I didn't even know if I was going to be able to show up to the race, let alone train for the weeks leading up. So it was really difficult to just wrap my mind around, you know, really pushing myself for a 2.5 hour race when I was going through so much stuff. So the goal was just to make it to the starting line, which I did. So I was super happy with that. And once I made it to the starting line, it was like, what else can I accomplish next? So got in there and ended up trying to run the same pace that I had planned on running throughout the entire cycle. I was in a really good shape and just, you know, training was going really, really well. So my legs just started turning over, and I just found myself in one of the lead groups with the women at the Marathon Project, and just kept going from there until 4 miles. Unfortunately, I started to have a little bit of just a feeling of wanting to throw up. And I've had this in marathons before. You know, you're always taking the gels and the fluid, but it doesn't normally happen that early. So it was a little disconcerting. And then I ended up, you know, throwing up at mile 10 and not really knowing if I would be able to keep going just from losing all that fluid and all that nutrition. And so I was really concerned about just still carrying on. And then little did I know, my legs just wanted to keep going and my body felt good after, like, you know, just purging out all that gunk. And so whatever it was that was in my system, I just felt really, really good and started tackling the pace again. My legs just kept turning over. And so I was just trying to be in the moment as much as I could. And it was probably around, you know, mile 20, one of the pacers, Nick Willis, a lot of people know who he is, I'm sure. He was pacing me. He was helping me out for the majority of the race, and he dropped out at mile 20. And so the last 6 miles were really, really hard. And I started to feel the effects of, you know, losing some of that nutrition, and my legs started becoming heavier and heavier. It just felt like lead. So just really pushing through those last 6 miles were really, really hard. And I had so many doubts in those moments of wanting to drop out and is this worth it? And I don't know what spurred me on, you know, at times, but there were other times when I would look over and, you know, we were on a course that you could see some of the top runners coming by you because there are so many U-turns. And so I would see the lead men and the lead women as we were kind of, you know, going on each side of the road. And I caught a glimpse of my teammate, Mick Isofano. He was in the lead for the men. And so that just gave me so much just excitement and motivation for my own race. And so just seeing him and then seeing Sarah Hall run as well as she did and, you know, just go after that American record. It was so inspiring. And so I just focused on, you know, just they're making me so proud. So I just want to, you know, be proud of my own race and have other people be proud of my race too. So that's what kept me going.
That's incredible because, you know, especially in the marathon, you have so much time to doubt yourself, so much opportunity to question, is it worth it? And should I continue? And having, like you said, having that, you know, adversity that early in the race. And for many of us, you know, it's kind of one of those things. There are certain things we feel like we can run through pretty consistently. And there are other things that just really, it's tough. And that, you know, anytime it's stomach like that, it's hard. So I'm so impressed. And then, you know, late in the race, being able to kind of have a resurgence of motivation too. So anyone who's run a marathon is hearing you describe this and they're thinking to themselves, I don't know. I don't know that I can do that. I don't know that it's physically possible to do that. So you touched on kind of the experience there. What are you telling yourself, though, when you're in that moment early in the race and it's like, I'm about to puke? What are you telling yourself to continue running even at that moment when, you know, when you don't start feeling good again yet? But how do you get there?
It's really about just staying in the moment. And, you know, as uncomfortable as it is, just really trying to focus on being mindful. And, you know, I wasn't feeling well. So my body's trying to tell me something, you know, do I need to slow down? Will I feel better if I slow down? And if that helps, then, you know, do that for a little while and kind of key off of your body and how you're feeling. And that's what I did. And I slowed down a bit. It was still kind of there. And all of a sudden, you know, it just came out. And so that was something that I had never really experienced, just like in the race, like completely just, you know, stopping on the side of the road. And it was hard just because, you know, you're losing so much contact with the rest of the group and the rest of the runners. And it's really hard to kind of come out of that and be like, oh, I can still run my time. But the marathon is such a long race that there is time to make up. That's what is so special about it and so nice about it. You know, maybe like a 10K or a 5K, you don't have that time to make up because it's such a short race. But there's so many ebbs and flows in the marathon. And going into that, you have to know that there's going to be some good times and some bad times. And you're going to have to just kind of ride the wave. And so that's kind of how I view it, is just ride the wave, you know, the storm will settle and you'll be able to get into your groove again, just like you always do.
I can appreciate that you also kind of turned my comment back on me there, because I said the marathon's so long, you have so much time to doubt yourself. And you responded with the marathon's so long, you have so much time to make it up, to still hope and still achieve. So you sound like an optimist, Emma. Would you say that you are an optimistic person?
I have became one throughout the years, just throughout all my experiences. I have had so many frustrations and so many failures, and I've realized that those failures have turned into life lessons and lessons that I can carry forward into other races or other parts of my life. And so it really just spinning that into a positive light of, you know, this stuff is happening to me so that I can grow. So that's made me definitely an optimistic person. Yeah.
That's rich. That's amazing. In one of your recaps, you said that you had like a lot of thoughts and questions, like, should I continue this pace? Should I not? And you said, as these thoughts were racing through my head, I realized I was already doing it. Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to unpack trusting your body when your mind might be telling you one thing and then your body is telling you another. Like, how do you bring that together in a race?
I think we all have problems with our mind getting in the way of, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, or maybe what our bodies are trying to accomplish. You know, our bodies are capable of more than we think. And it's really hard to just not think, but that is the best way to run, I've realized, is kind of running unconscious almost, and not just like just throwing everything out there and not second guessing yourself, just trusting your instincts and trusting that, you know, your body will carry you through this, because that's what training is for. That's what you do all that training for. And you need to trust that it's going to come out when it needs to. And Yeah, again, I mean, I had so many doubts in that moment, but finally, I just let it go. So that's the main advice, I think, is just once you start getting all jumbled in your head, just let it go, and you will find yourself in a completely new position.
That's really good.
Definitely. So it's a difficult comparison, but I think it's a valuable one for us to make as we're reflecting on this topic, thinking then back to the trials. And so 2020 in Atlanta, pre-pandemic and all of everything else, that race did not unfold ideally for you. And you had to make some tough choices in that one as well. If you can, Emma, talk us through how that experience unfolded and how that's different than other times where you've made different choices.
So I went into that race completely thinking that I was going to make that team. And the goal of the race was to just run my own race, and I didn't do that at all. And this is why I am so frustrated looking back at this race, because everything that I said I was going to do, I just completely threw it out the window. It was a weird race, just because there was a lot of hills. It was really, really windy. And so I just like to run my own race. But in this race specifically, there was a lot of tactics, just because, you know, you want to run behind somebody so that they block the wind. And, you know, you don't want to just get too excited on the hills or anything like that, just because you want to, you know, make that team, you want to make the top three. So it wasn't like a normal marathon where I just get into a groove. I was just kind of really keying off of people. And I wasn't listening to my instincts. My instincts were telling me to take off from the pack and just run my own race and not worry about anybody else. But then my mind got in the way. Like I said, it always, you know, seems to creep in there. You start to second, you know, guess yourself and doubt yourself. And, that's when the race completely ran away from me. And, to not be able to grasp that, even right now, I just, you know, I'm really frustrated by it. Like, why didn't I do that? So, I think that's a big learning lesson that I have, is just to trust my instincts and to know that, you know, running my own race is the main thing, and I need to do that going forward. So I am frustrated about it, but it has changed my life in a lot of ways and the way that I run in a lot of ways.
So Emma, when there are times where you are in a race and there's a pack, I think a lot of us have those decisions. For you, it was like, I needed to break away from that pack. what if you're going into a situation where like you, like it's a shorter race, like a 10K race, how do you navigate pack situations in that arena?
So I struggle with that still. I haven't ran a track race in like 3 years. And I've always hated the tactics involved. I've always hated just running somebody else's race. So I'm still learning how to kind of go with the pack when you need to. I'm definitely more of like a metronomic runner, a very rhythmic runner. So I just like to run the same pace throughout the entire race. And that's not how championship races are. That's not how a lot of shorter races are. So I don't really know how to answer your question because I'm still figuring that out. But I think, again, just like trusting your instincts. If you're not thinking and you're just going with the pack, you'll know when it's the right time to either, you know, pull back or keep going forward or just start passing people. You know when you feel good. And I think that's the main thing that I've learned throughout my entire career is just listening to my body. And you know that if there's something left in the tank, and you have to be honest with yourself too. You know, sometimes I'm really tired and, you know, I think that, you know, I just can't push myself anymore, but sometimes there's still some left in there and you need to explore that. And that's something that you need to take a risk on sometimes. And so that's something that I really wanna, you know, explore going forward on the track or maybe a shorter race, is just really taking those risks and, you know, just listening to my body and trusting myself.
I've heard it said, you know, in these discussions, and I'm kind of hearing some of these same thoughts as you're expressing this too, that if you run someone else's race, then you've already lost. And so if you can get someone else to run your race, that's the first step in beating the competition, if you will. And it's, you know, all the sports psychology type of stuff, psychology of racing and those things. And really the idea, you know, the spirit of it is when you can run versus when you have to compete, you can be a different kind of runner in that moment. And as you're describing these things, those are those moments where I can make the decisions I need to make because that's what my body needs, you know, at that time. That's what kind of race I need to run at that time. And as you say, you don't always have the luxury. So there's this fine line of trying to, I have to do what the situation calls for, but I also have to do what I need to do. So in reflecting with our audience and the majority of people in general who run, they're not necessarily running to win the race they're in. Obviously, there's only ever a few or a select group of people who are trying to win the race they're in. But everyone's looking for victory in that moment. And most often, the path to that victory is running the best kind of race that I can run. So how do you make sure when you're in a moment like that and you're tempted toward something, how do you know when you're tempted to make the wrong choice versus how do you know that you're in the right state of mind?
I can tell that pretty quick just by my breathing, for one. If my breathing starts to become erratic, that's when I know I need to calm down. And I tend to get really claustrophobic too when I'm around a lot of people, and that's like a trigger for me when I start to, it's almost like I feel like I'm out of control. If I'm starting to run somebody else's race, it almost feels like the walls are closing in on me and I just feel like I'm just like losing control. So I guess that's a way that I've kind of, I don't know, recognize that I am in trouble because I am not running my own race and I'm not listening to myself. And I need to step back and just get back into my bubble and just really focus on me, my breathing, me and my footsteps. So one foot in front of the other. Mindfulness has been the biggest part of just my journey and running and just really focusing on the here and now, not focusing on, you know, what is going to happen in, you know, a minute or two, or, you know, what happened in the past, just really focus on the here and now. And that seems to really help me get out of that, you know, just becoming overwhelmed with the race and being overwhelmed with, you know, decisions to make. So, yeah. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Yeah.
In a deep and profound way. That's awesome.
And that's so practical too. The thought that you can recognize in your breathing and in that, like that sense, that panic kind of the panic instinct where it's like, you know, why am I feeling this way? Well, clearly it's because I'm starting to do something that, you know, I'm chasing the other person's thing and in that sense. And so that's really practical too. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I would love to talk about your marathon championship win. The U.S. Marathon Championship, that was in 2018. Would you talk us through that race and some of your in-race decisions?
So that was a weird race just because I ran the whole thing basically by myself. I wasn't really intending on running it by myself, but I just was feeling really good. And I just kept clicking off the fast miles and I ended up, you know, winning in the end, but it was more just an experience. I wasn't planning on winning. I wasn't planning on running a certain time. It was all just about having fun. And that was the main thing for my first marathon is I just want to finish and want to do it again. So that was the main thing. So I don't really know what I thought about, but just being just so happy that I was getting through this really long, what I thought was a really daunting race, and just feeling really, really good and enjoying myself. And I love the training of marathon training. And so for me to enjoy the race as much as I did, I wouldn't have it any other way. If I didn't win the race, that's totally fine. As long as I had a good experience was the main thing. And I continue to enjoy marathoning. I've only done 4 now, but I hope I continue to enjoy them just as much as that first one.
You know,
I guess I didn't realize that was your first marathon
debut for a championship.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow. How cool is that?
It was a complete blur just because I had no idea what to expect or what to think. So I don't really have anything to take from that, but just joy, I guess.
Joy. Well, having joy. That's a great place to start with all of us, right? We got to start in a place of joy.
They often say you'll either never enjoy or never regret a marathon more than your first one. And so hopefully you can enjoy another marathon as much as that one. But certainly it's so great to be able to experience that. And then, you know, as you've obviously you've taken some highs and some lows since then and just been able to continue to, you know, as the Marathon Project indicated, continue to find a way toward, you know, that successful experience.
Yes.
So let's talk about your 2019 Chicago race, which was a phenomenal race. And that's your PR. Like, that's where you got your PR. Is that correct?
Yep that's correct. Yep.
Okay. Would you mind talking us through that race? Or what you took away from that?
Yeah. So the main thing there was to run fast. So I got into the race and, you know, we have pacers, so that's super nice. And that's one luxury that the professionals have is you can just, you know, get in behind somebody that's running a time that you want to run and just not think, just, you know, stay on their heels as much as you can. There is a lot of, you know, am I in over my head or am I going too slow kind of thoughts. And so that was a bit of my thoughts the beginning of the Chicago Marathon was I was feeling really, really good, but we weren't going quite as fast as my body wanted me to go. So I kept with the pacers for the first half, and then I started taking off the second half. And I think that was the smart decision, honestly, because the marathon is a really long race. That was only my second time running a marathon, and I just felt so good finishing. So to start off as fast as I did in that race and to continue on and, you know, negative split and still feel really good in the end was, I think, just a really good experience for me for a second marathon, just because, you know, I ran so much faster. I think I PR'd by like 3 minutes and I just felt so good doing it. So it was another really enjoyable race. And it was a race that I could walk away from really proud of and say that I want to do this again. There was never a point where I wanted to drop out or, you know, I thought it was too hard or I was in over my head. So, it was really the second, you know, the third and fourth marathons that really got me thinking and have helped me grow immensely. Chicago is just something that I can look back on and just, you know, smile and be like, oh, that's so sweet, you know, that I, you know, didn't have any problems and just went through it and really, really excelled. But that's not something that I can look back on and really pinpoint a lot of areas that I can improve on. So, yeah.
So I suppose this is my last question at the moment. But in thinking about that and then looking at what you did at Marathon Project, despite those adversities, you must be thinking to yourself, there's still so much more there.
There absolutely is. And that's what's so exciting about it. And that's what gets me really motivated. And yeah, just to know that I could overcome so many obstacles and just show myself how resilient I am and show myself how much strength that I really do have and I didn't really know was there. So this is the Marathon Project is probably the most important race of my career. I can look back on it fondly now. I was a little frustrated at first, just, you know, all those things being thrown at me. I thought that, you know, just going to the starting line was a big accomplishment, but then I wanted more and more and more because we're runners and, you know, we're very competitive. So at that time I was really, really sad, but looking back now, this race is going to change my life and my career, in a way that I never thought possible. And so I'm about to be 10 times stronger going forward. And that's something really cool to look back on. Yeah.
That race was so courageous. So courageous.
Thank you.
I'm just like so grateful that you have this authenticity that you share with your fans and with the running community. It's truly a generous gift. I want you to know that. And it's very impactful for all of us who are able to watch your journey.
Well, thank you. I never know if, you know, me opening up will really resonate with anybody or anybody can really relate. So it's good to know that it's received so well and I can help somebody, at least one person along the way, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for joining us, Emma. We're going to keep our audience updated on you and what you're doing. Do you have anything on the horizon? I always am nervous to ask that because it's, you know, 2021.
It is. Yeah. 2021. Exactly. March 20th, there might be a race in Florida that I'll show up to. But other than that, it's kind of just play it by ear and see what shows up. And hopefully I can show up there as well. So, yeah, I'll keep you guys updated if I can.
Well, if we can work it out, we may be able to say hi in person on the 20th then as well.
Maybe. Awesome. Zach's thinking about running that race, maybe, if it's the same one you're I'm guessing it's the same one you're talking.
I don't think there's very many, so I think we're going
to. There aren't very many. Yes. Well, whatever the case may be, from our audience to you, we are so grateful for your time and for your sharing of these experiences. And certainly we'll, continue to follow and keep our audience updated on these comings and goings.
Thank you. Thank you guys again so much for having me and listening to my story. You guys are so sweet. Thank you.
So many thanks to Emma for sharing from those experiences and insights. And certainly as I reflect on one of the things that stood out quite notably to me was the thought about when she mentioned, you know, how is it that I know when I'm in a race if I'm not doing what I should be doing or I'm not making the choice that I probably should be making? One of the things that she said she would notice was her breathing. It just isn't right. You know, it's erratic, it's off, or almost kind of like the idea that I'm not comfortable. You know, I'm not comfortable in the race that I'm running right now. And I can tell because my body's giving me signs. Mm-hmm. And in knowing that, making the choice of what do I need to do to get to a point where my body will be comfortable. And that is such an important reflection. It doesn't matter how fast or not that we're running, whether it's an actual race or we're just out for a workout. We're just out for an easy run. That's the key takeaway that we should be thinking about here. When I need to make a decision to be attuned to that kind of what is giving me a sign. Mm-hmm. More on that in a moment. But Andy, what did you feel?
Yeah, my reflection was about how she was talking in the moment when she had to make the decision. She just kept making the decision to keep running. So like she wasn't thinking about, oh man, I'm vomiting early on in the race. Like, how am I going to feel at mile 20? Like that wasn't what was going through her head. She's like, you know, next step, next step, next step. And I actually took this advice. I was thinking about this interview with Emma when I was running a time trial on the treadmill, which is not ideal at all. And I'm like, my legs are just like moving. And I'm like, how can I keep moving my legs this fast? And I was like, well, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to do it as long as I can. And, you know, it worked out great. So I guess like the big takeaway for me is like, make the decision in the moment. Don't think about what you're going to have to do later. If you're following a plan, a smart plan for your race, just stay in the moment.
So I want to zoom all the way out then and just make a practical point for all of us to take away from this reflection on when we're making decisions in the midst of a run. Because if you, like us, are not Emma Bates and don't find yourself trying to win U.S. championship races very often, occasionally maybe, but no, not often. So if you're like us, then we need to think about what are the kinds of decisions we're still making, because we are and we should be, and especially needing to know why we would make a certain choice at a certain time. Those are the things like, am I going too hard or too easy right now? And so should I go faster or slower or something like that? Do I really want to do this right now? How many of you have felt that in the midst of a race or a run or anything else? Is this really what I want to be doing right now? Can I make it? So I'm running and I'm thinking I've got 10 more miles to go. Can I do that? Can I even get through that? Andy on the treadmill at 5K pace? Can I make it 5K distance at 5K pace? There's only one way to find out. Run one more step. But in trying to think about these decisions, I want to say, I guess, kind of the key reflection, which is that you need to know your purpose and know yourself in the moment of decision. And if you have those two senses internalized, then you can make the right decision. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily perfectly all the time, but that's how you're going to be able to make the right decision. So you hold near to the reason that you run, and you keep that understood and internalized, as well as your goals. And then before you become a student of the sport, so that you can grow your sense of those things. You know, what purpose is for the things I'm doing right now? You know, why do I do this workout at this time? Or why do I run this race this hard? You know, those kinds of things. Some of that, we just need to learn more to really truly be able to understand those things. But then, in a final point, train in such a way so that you can attune your awareness to your body and attune your body to your will. Mm. So that you can know both what you're experiencing and what you can do about it in a given moment.
That's good.
And if you need any help, or you feel like you would want someone to help walk with you in that journey, we happen to do exactly that as we're coaching athletes. And so many of the conversations we're having with athletes are these kinds of things. You know, we write the training and we can all go out there and we can find good training somehow, some way, somewhere. But it's in implementing these trainings, it's in implementing our goals and pursuing those things that sometimes it's just good to have some more thoughts and some more opinions. AtoZRunning.com/coaching might just be a place to help you find those things.
Yeah. I should mention too that if you were inspired by Emma, you should definitely follow her journey, because she's not done yet with this whole racing scene. She is at Emma Janelle Bates on Instagram, and you can find us on Instagram at A to Z Running. We would love to connect with you there too.